Well, Erie Voices tells the arts, culture, and history of northern Minnesota. And today we're actually going to get a couple history lessons on trains and here with co-ops. Pam Brunfelt is a historian and instructor at the Vermilion Community College in Ely. She knows a lot about Iron Range history, and she spoke with Maggie Montgomery recently about the cooperative movement on the Iron Range.
Co-ops existed in the state before they began on the Iron Range. Wherever there were Finns, there were co-ops. There were co-ops, for example, over in the New York Mills area, probably by the 1890s. But because the Iron Range developed later than other places in the state, the co-ops also developed later. But just as an example, the Mesaba Park, which is a co-op, began 90 years ago.
That's a long time ago.
That's a long time ago. But it was relatively late in comparison to others. The Finland co-op, for example, celebrated its centennial not too long ago. The Virginia Co-op Credit Union just had its 80th anniversary. So they've been here for a long time. Once the Finns got settled here and they realized that the economic conditions didn't work in their favor, they began to go back to what they had learned in Finland about the economic commonwealth. And they turned to the co-ops as a means of providing for themselves. Profit was never a motive. It was always about helping each other.
What kind of co-ops are we talking about? You mentioned a few that remain today, but in the time, what were these co-ops like?
What made the Finns different than other places that had co-ops? The Danes and the Swedes and the Norwegians all had co-ops. But they tended to be more oriented towards production, agriculture producers. And so they were not retail-oriented. What set the Finnish cooperatives apart from everybody else was the fact that they were retail. So they began to form small stores and credit unions and even funeral homes. As far as I know, no one else but the Finns had funeral homes. The Range Cooperatives was the only one that started a funeral home. It was in Virginia on 2nd Avenue in Finntown. It just wasn't done. I mean, when I tell people there was a cooperative funeral home, they're just shocked. And what's interesting about it is that the cost of the funeral was lower, but more significantly, if you had a family member buried from the Range Co-op, at the end of the year, you got a rebate.
Oh, my goodness.
My mother's remains were handled by Range Co-op just recently, and I wouldn't be surprised if we got a rebate check, at the end of this year. I don't know if they're still doing that, but it will be interesting to see.
Yeah. Why and when did the Finnish people move to northeastern Minnesota because of the iron mining at the time?
Yes. They were, of course, Upper Michigan had a lot of Finns. In fact, Houghton and Hancock are really Finnish communities. And then they were in northern Wisconsin. Bruce Crossing still has their co-op. So they moved west. As the mining moved west, Finns aren't naturally miners. That was not something they came here for, but they were jobs. And it had nothing to do with the fact that this area looked like Finland. It had to do with economics, and they could get jobs. But they were terrible jobs. Working in an underground mine was constantly dangerous. The wages were poor. They worked in what is essentially sweatshop conditions. They never knew what their pay would be. They would get paid once a month. They were charged for the dynamite. They were charged for the blasting caps and the other materials that they needed to be mining. And the company determined how many things they had used during the month, and then they wouldn't get paid what they thought they should get paid. lives were very unstable. And the one thing the Finns wanted more than anything else was to own their own land. And under the conditions they were working in, that wasn't going to happen. So they had to find another means of supporting each other, and co-ops was the method that they used to do that.
You know, a lot of different cultural communities moved into the Iron Range. How were the Finnish people, how did they fit in, I guess? How were they treated?
Well, the Finns were often, there was prejudice against them. There were some parks in the area that had signs that said no Finns or Indians allowed. They were viewed with suspicion, mostly because they wouldn't comply. They were more willing to fight the system, and so the mining companies didn't like them. They were feistier. They were not church people as a rule. It's estimated that only about a quarter of Finnish immigrants joined the church, any church. The rest were unchurched people, mm-hmm. and that, of course, increased the suspicion of them because they were not conforming to society. They often weren't welcome unless there was a strike, and then they led those strikes because the other groups knew that the Finns knew how to do it. They were leaders. They were also the largest group, but they didn't speak the same language. The Finnish language is much more difficult to learn than other languages. They were known as insular people. They stayed among themselves. They were quiet people, generally. You know, Finns on the Iron Range are not necessarily quiet, but initially they were. And so they kind of were on the outside, on the fringes of Iron Range society. And they didn't mind that, especially after the 1907 strike, when 7 out of 10 were blacklisted by the mining companies. They moved out of the range cities. I call it the Finnish diaspora. And they moved into rural communities like Pike Sandy and Cherry and Zim. And up here it would have been Burntside where they tended to congregate. And Britt would have been one of those, Angora, Palo Markham, and Brimson, Toimi, all were Finnish diaspora communities. And so then they had these rural enclaves where they also formed co-ops to support each other.
Now, you told me the other day that the 1907 strike was a catalyst of sorts for co-op formation in northeastern Minnesota.
It was, because the mainstream business community, you know, they were caught between a rock and a hard place. It's tough to criticize them. They depended on the mining companies for a good deal of their income. They also depended on the miners for their income. And so they were really caught in the middle. And to keep the mining companies happy, they often would not extend credit to the Finns, who, of course, or the miners who were not working at that time and were on strike. As a result, the Finns decided that they would take matters into their own hands, and they began to organize co-ops. The strikes and co-ops are not separated. In Crosby, for example, in the 1913 strike, they formed a small co-op. It died, and then in 1917, they organized permanently their cooperative store, and that one remained open until 1952. So you often found that co-ops followed in the wake or at the time of a strike.
You mentioned a few of the co-ops that still exist today. Do you see, besides those, do we see remnants of the beliefs and attitudes that led to their establishment today in the Finnish communities?
Oh, yes. Many of the co-ops that are still in existence, for example, Northern Harvest in Virginia, has a lot of Finnish members. The Finland co-op is still largely has a lot of Finnish members. They did not abandon those principles, but the economics changed. Pike Sandy Co-op closed, not because the Finns no longer valued co-ops, but because modern transportation and people working in Virginia, it was easier to buy your whatever you needed in Virginia on your way home after work than to shop at the co-op. The values changed, but where those co-ops exist, they're still supported by Finns.
Are there lessons that we can take from the story of the co-ops and take it into our lives today?
Oh, I think the co-op movement is alive and very well, doing very well. One of the reasons, I think, is because the huge conglomerates that control food production in this country are now viewed with a great deal of suspicion. So when things are grown locally, or we know where they're coming from, or they've got organic, they're organic, people are attracted to that. The co-op in Virginia is growing constantly because people are turning away from mass-produced food that has unknown origins. And so those kinds of co-ops are now valuable, and they serve people the same way the co-ops did in the 20th century.
Pam Brunfeld, you obviously have a passion for Iron Range history. Where does that come from in your life?
I didn't intend to be an Iron Range historian. I was a historian, and my love in college was Greece. And then I went on, and after I graduated, I worked in local historical societies, Otter Tail County and Crow Wing County. And then I decided to go back to graduate school. In the meantime, I had learned about the communist mayor of Crosby, and I wanted to know about him. So I began doing research on the Cuyuna Iron Range. And one thing led to another, and I became immersed in Iron Range history. And that passion for it has never left. I guess I probably always had it, but I just didn't think that a person who was passionate about the place they grew up should be doing history on that place because of supposedly you're not objective. Well, I'm a trained professional historian. I'm objective. I'm just passionate about it. I can't imagine doing anything else. So the accidental turn that Carl Nygaard, the communist mayor of Crosby, put me on led to today.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me this morning. And that's a great story of how you became so involved in Iron Range history.
Well, you're welcome.
That's Pam Brunfeld and, of course, Maggie, talking about Iron Range history. Pam is an instructor at the Vermilion Community College in Ely. And just want to remind you that Area Voices is made possible by the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and by the people of Minnesota.